Hey folks, Justin McElroy here. Listen, just want to warn you ahead of time, while this week's show will still be free of profanity as you've come to expect from us, we do get into some adult topics. So if you're listening with the kids, you might want to make sure that they're comfortable with that, I guess. I don't know what your relationship is like with your kids.
I'd have that whole birds and the bees talk with them before listening to this episode if I were you.
You go ahead and knock that out.
Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to Sawbones, a marital duo of misguided medicine. I am your co-host, Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
Just finishing up her Nature Box Lemon Almond Biscotti Bites.
More about that later.
More on that later.
So how are you today, Justin?
I'm doing well. It's a nice early morning recording. We shipped the puddle off to your in-laws to
that
hang out
with. That is what we call our daughter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they know that. So we shipped her off to learn and grow and eat some sweet potatoes over there at Mimi and Pop's house. And now I'm ready to hear about some medical history, Sydney.
Well, I thought we could take a second to like talk and learn a little more about each other. You know, we don't get to talk much these days.
I think when we're recording a podcast is a fine time to do that. What did you have in mind as a topic?
I don't know. Just like to learn more about like your likes and dislikes and like your favorite things. Like, I mean, I know like your favorite food is cereal.
You're right.
Because you eat that a lot.
Yep.
But like, I don't know other things. Like, what's your favorite poem?
Oh, wow. My favorite poem. Man. I mean, I've got so many.
Recite it from memory immediately, please.
Immediately? Favorite poem. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it.
That's the McDonald's jingle?
Food, folks, and fun.
What's that from?
Is that a poem?
Is that another jingle?
My favorite poem.
You got nothing, do you?
Is my my favorite
have
poem.
Have you ever read a poem?
Ride my pony. My saddle's waiting. Ride it, my pony.
I don't think that's appropriate.
It's an equestrian poem.
For our podcast. And I mean, I guess. So you're falling back on the songs are poetry kind of thing, you
know,
for like a
yes.
Jewel-esque.
I'll be honest, I don't know that much poetry. I had a couple poetry classes. I wrote, you know, in college, in keeping with law, for somebody with a liberal arts degree, I wrote some bad poetry. But I guess I like E.E. Cummings.
Okay.
Carry Your Heart With Me. Carry It In My Heart. That's a good one.
Oh, there you go.
That's my favorite
okay.
poem. Well, that's my favorite poem. What's yours?
Well, would you like me to recite it for you?
Of course, yeah.
Okay. So this is my favorite poem. It's a little, I don't know, it's not everybody's taste, but know me.
Hit me.
Okay.
You're going to recite it from memory?
Yes, completely from memory.
Okay.
Well, now you took it off the screen, so now
okay,
I can't.
Okay, well, then, all right, then.
Now I can't pretend to recite it from memory.
Well, okay. Well,
that was a great trick.
You put me on blast for my lack of knowledge about poetry, so I just...
So Justin wanted to take it away, so I couldn't see it anymore, so that it could be this great trick that it looked like I was... It was a trick you were trying to play on our audience, and I don't appreciate that.
It's an audience trick. Okay, here we go. Sorry.
Yeah, so anyway, from memory.
From memory.
there was a young man from Black Bay who thought syphilis just went away. He believed that a chancre was only a canker that healed in a week and a day. But now he has acne vulgaris, or whatever they call it in Paris. On his skin it has spread from his feet to his head, and his friends want to know where his hair is. There's more to his terrible plight. His pupils won't close in the light. His heart is cavorting, his wife is aborting, and he squints through his gun barrel sight. Arthralgia cuts into his slumber, his aorta in need of a plumber, but now he has tabies and saber shin babies, while of gummas he has quite a number. He's been treated in every known way, but his spirochetes grow day by day. He's developed paresis, has long talks with Jesus, and he thinks he's the queen of the May.
What is that about?
Well, thank you, Theodore Roseberry, who wrote that lovely syphilis poem. It's about syphilis. It's to remember all the symptoms of syphilis in a poem.
Why has syphilis inspired a poem?
You know, syphilis has actually inspired quite a few poems.
Really?
Throughout the ages. Do you want to know more about syphilis?
I'd love to know more about syphilis.
Well, let's talk about syphilis.
Okay.
A lot of our listeners want us to talk about syphilis.
Yeah, you guys are like hungry for syphilis chat.
Which, I mean, that makes me worry. Like, it's really, just to skip ahead, it's really easily treatable. Go see a doctor. Don't wait for a podcast.
They got to do this episode. I'm dying over here.
But thank you to some of the people who have suggested it. Ruth, Aaron, Hannah, Anne, Diane, Megan, Patricia, and Holly, and I'm sure many other people have suggested it. But syphilis is an old disease. The first outbreak we know about, the first one that was recorded, and I'll get into kind of, there's a lot more question as to where it may have started before this, but the first recorded outbreak was in
Florida. A lot of theoretical syphilis.
A lot of
band name, I call it theoretical syphilis.
I don't know how many people are going to want to come see. I'm going to go to...
You're going to come to the show anyway because you're supportive. And I appreciate that about you.
Will you sing songs about syphilis?
No, there's no...
Anyway, 1494, some French troops invaded Naples, Italy, and while they were there wreaking havoc, they, you know, started plundering the town and, unfortunately, plundering the citizens, and there's this weird disease that started spreading.
I bet it's syphilis.
Everybody started getting, and it was pretty apparent, you know, a lot of the time we don't know how things spread. We talk about on our show that people are like, I don't know, it was a bad smell that spread the plague, something mm-hmm. like that. People figured out pretty quickly that syphilis had something to do with sexual contact mm-hmm. because of where your symptoms start. And I'll get into describing kind of the course of syphilis, but it was pretty apparent pretty quickly. Like
the course of syphilis is another great title for anything.
So people started getting sick, really sick, started dying, because syphilis back then was a little worse than syphilis now. And this is when we first know that syphilis pops up in the historical record. Now, as far as where it came from before that, there's actually a lot of controversy over whether it was a disease that when Columbus visited the Americas that he brought back with him. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you think about it, 1494, 1495, when the first big outbreak happens, not too long after. Do you remember when Columbus sailed the ocean blue?
I believe it was 1492.
There you go. I was giving you a clue because it rhymes.
Yeah.
This is a poetry episode.
Oh, my God.
More poetry.
Oh, my gosh.
So there's some question. We think it came from the Americas. We have some evidence that would support that. Other people are saying, well, maybe it existed in Europe before. There's some things that Hippocrates even wrote about that sound kind of like syphilis. So maybe it was always in Europe. There are some related diseases that we find in Africa. But at the end of the day, our best evidence at this point is that I don't know. Was this retribution for the smallpox that Columbus's crew brought over?
It's all's fair in love and war, Native
so
Americans.
They
sorry
sent
about
syphilis
that.
Back over.
See, you did one too. You did a bad. You see, it maybe the tables have turned now.
No.
Maybe it's not. No,
no, it doesn't make up for
it's
anything.
Not, it doesn't make
no,
up for
it doesn't.
Anything.
It doesn't.
But no, it doesn't.
We've talked a lot about poetry. The word syphilis actually comes from a poem. That's where we get the name of the disease, syphilis. Prior to that, it had lots of other names, but the name syphilis came from a poem written by Girolamo Fracastoro, who was an Italian doctor and, I guess, poet.
Poet.
Or
fancied
himself.
Poet. Yeah.
Quite the poet. And he wrote a poem about a man who was named syphilis.
That is unfortunate.
Well,
that is a rough burden to bear, mon frère. Sorry about that.
At the time, it wasn't called syphilis.
He must have been jazzed about this poem, though. Oh, cool. What is it? Oh, excellent. Excellent. It's syphilis. Oh, the penis falling off thing. The syphilis.
No. That's not what happens.
That's why you can't see. That's why you gotta do symptoms first.
No, I will tell you the symptoms. I have nothing to work with.
Okay.
So a man named Syphilis is given the disease by Apollo as punishment because there was like a drought and, Apollo was the sun god. So he was blamed for it. And Syphilis was like cursing Apollo, like, I can't believe you brought us this drought. And Apollo was like, well, take this
Syphilis.
You want to curse my name? You get this disease, which henceforth was known as Syphilis.
Yeah.
Before it was called Syphilis. It depended on where you were in Europe or the world in general as to what you would call it.
Can I ask a question that's also around this topic? Uh-huh. Is VD syphilis?
VD actually stands for venereal disease, mm-hmm. which could reference any kind of sexually transmitted infection. It's kind of an outdated term. We actually
VD
don't...
is like an outdated way of saying STD.
Yes.
Okay.
And actually, more commonly now, and I don't know if this is everybody, but I tend to say STI, sexually transmitted infection.
Mm. What's the difference?
I think so, it's
like
more
in one
of,
sentence. What's the difference between disease and infection?
Well, I don't think it's so much the difference between the two as the way that it sounds. I think it's more of a disease sounds worse.
Okay.
You get a sexually transmitted infection.
I know
a sexually transmitted disease sounds. I mean,
I catch chlamydia, all I can think is, I just wish this was framed better from a linguistic point of view. That would really help this bitter pill go down a little smoother.
And it's also it's also not something that you necessarily have forever. There are sexually transmitted infections that become chronic diseases, but then there are things like gonorrhea and chlamydia, which just go away
when you're treated. Let's just call them pumpkin pie high fives. If we're gonna sure. Hey, good news. You got a pumpkin pie high five.
Kids, wear a condom. Don't get a pumpkin pie high five.
Yeah. Like, if we're just like,
that's never going to work.
It's never going to work.
They're all going to want that.
We're fired from whatever this imaginary job is.
So let's talk about what they called syphilis. So if you were in Germany, you would have called, especially in the early 1500s, you would have called syphilis the French disease.
Nice.
If you were in France, you would call it the Italian disease. If you were in Holland, you called it the Spanish disease. In Russia, you called it the Polish disease. In Turkey, it was the Christian disease. And in Tahiti, it was the British disease.
Oh my gosh. And humans are the best.
I think there were some other countries thrown in from time to time that were blamed. But generally, it was probably whatever like colonists showed up and then you got it. You were like, well, it's probably their fault.
They did it.
It was also, we've talked a lot about smallpox. This was also known as the Great Pox.
Mm.
Because there are some they're not exactly pox like lesions, but a rash that happens in the second stage of syphilis. And they wanted to make sure that we were clarifying the difference between this and smallpox. So it was called the Great Pox. It was also called Cupid's disease, which I think you could piece together why.
Yeah.
And I thought this was interesting. There was a name for the ulcers that it caused among British soldiers stationed in Portugal. They called it the Black Lion.
Whoa.
Sounds like
it's heavy.
Cool.
Yeah.
And in Scotland, they called it Grangore.
Grangore. Okay.
Grangore, which I like that name because it's very gory. So initially, syphilis starts spreading in Naples, and then it just takes off all over Europe. And anywhere that European explorers are going, they carry syphilis along with them and spread it to the populace there. And like I said, it was by the 1520s, it was well established that this was sexually transmitted. And so there were attempts already to stop it, you know, even not knowing what it is or, you know, anything about the organism that spreads it. There were attempts to stop it by closing down brothels, closing down public bathhouses, or specifically saying like, well, we can have a bathhouse, but only for men here and only for women here, like no mixed bathhouses. They tried to regulate prostitution, not stop it, just right. Regulate it. Just like try to figure out if there were certain prostitutes that were, and this would be hard to do at the time, I would think, like who may be carrying syphilis without any test for syphilis. That would have been very hard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, try to stop them from being prostitutes. For many, it was seen as a punishment for sin.
Okay.
The Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian I said that, you know, this was God's punishment because we've all been bad people and that this is just going to happen and everybody deal with it. And so there were some people who said, you know, whoever has syphilis, we should just kind of let them go die. because this is what God is doing to punish them. So there were some people who made no efforts whatsoever to treat or suppress syphilis with the thought that as long as they were a good kind of moral person,
they
wouldn't get it.
That's a bummer.
It had a lot of effect on history, and we've talked about this with other diseases. The fashions of the time were altered because women started wearing like a lot more makeup to hide the skin lesions, like big, thick, caked on makeup and things, because it kind of marked you. There were distinctive lesions that syphilis causes on the skin, and if you had them, then it wasn't just, you know, like smallpox. It was, oh no, you got smallpox. I feel so bad for you. This was, oh, you're one of those people. You got syphilis. Yeah. And this also actually, I saw this mentioned a couple places. It played a role in the history of the church, because if you were a member specifically of the Catholic Church and you were supposed to be celibate, then you had some disfigurements or lesions that were obviously from syphilis, then it began to question the absolute holiness of some of the more prominent church figures from town to town. So, and when we read, and I'm kind of already alluding to this, when you read the original descriptions of syphilis, it's really horrific. They talk about giant abscesses, so like these giant ulcers that then turn into like these pockets of pus that eat away at your skin, and specifically on your face and into your bones. Your nose would be completely destroyed by syphilis. We talked about this on the plastic surgery episode, that it specifically attacks the skin and the cartilage of your nose. So people would just basically not have a nose by the end. And their skin would fall off. It was a really disfiguring, horrific, fatal disease. This is not the course of syphilis now. This is not the way that we get syphilis now.
So what do you think that is? Do you think that's just like treating it repeatedly, and or is it a completely different disease, or?
No, it's not completely different. I think it's just changed over time. And then also, this was a population where there was zero immunity, so it just ravaged them. Now we have a lot more people who have either had syphilis or been exposed to syphilis, or...
We do?
Well, we don't now, but we did as time went on. Okay. And so the disease changed course, and then it mutates. And so
I was going to say.
Now we don't. I shouldn't say now.
The world is much different than I thought it was.
Between 1494 and now,
a lot more
people got syphilis.
Got it. So Sydney,
at one point, it was like a fifth of the world was infected with syphilis.
Sydney, what does syphilis do?
Exactly. Okay, so nowadays, if you were to get syphilis, this would be the course of your illness. First, you get a chancre, which is an ulcer. It's painless, if you can believe that, but it's just a single ulcer, and it's somewhere in your
genitalia,
your private.
You can use scrotum parts here.
Your bathing suit.
Bathing suit area.
And you just get one, and it's there for quite a while, like 4 to 6 weeks, and then it goes away. So a lot of people, and some people don't have this. So this is why syphilis is missed a lot, is because you have just this one thing, and then it goes away on its own, and it didn't hurt, and then you're fine. Mm-hmm. Or you didn't get it at all. You didn't have that first chancre. Secondary syphilis comes later. At this point, you get the rash that people were talking about a lot more when you read these old writings. You get some of it is just like red bumps on your groin, your hands, your feet. You can also get these raised plaques, so these like... Do you understand what I'm saying? Raised plaque,
no.
Like large flat area of skin that's raised.
Okay.
It's called condyloma lata. But anyway, the point is they were these big skin, obvious skin lesions, big giant, not just little red dots.
I love you very much. You gave me my daughter, and I do very much appreciate that. If I could just ask for myself and probably a good portion of the listeners, if you could just like sort of speed this section up a little bit. We're really lingering on all the chancres and oozing. If we could just kind of like beep, 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 kind of hit these a little quicker for me.
Okay. I just think this is the interesting part.
Okay. And go.
Okay. So after 2 to 6 weeks, this goes away. And you may have a couple different courses of secondary syphilis. You may have a couple different times where you get the rash and then it goes away. Then there's tertiary syphilis. This can happen anywhere from 2 years to 20 years after your initial infection. So this is a long-term thing. And this is for people who aren't treated.
it can involve neurological symptoms. You can get dementia from it. You can get meningitis. You can get these destructive lesions all over your body and in your organs called gummas. You can get an aneurysm of your aorta. There's all kinds of problems. Yeah, arthritises and arthralgias. Anyway, you can get really sick in tertiary syphilis. And that's what, in that poem, when they talk about he thinks he's the queen of the May, it's somebody that would get dementia and maybe even go what we would have thought of back at the time as crazy because of syphilis. Hmm. And you can see that with neurosyphilis at the end, people who are very altered as a result. And there's also, it's important to note, there's the syndrome of congenital syphilis. So syphilis, especially in the secondary stage, can be passed on to the fetus. Mm-hmm. So if a woman has syphilis while she's pregnant, and this used to be, especially in the 1500s, a huge, huge problem, and babies can be born with all kinds of deformities and internal organ diseases. And
so with all the, like, the different ways that this can present, it seems like it would be kind of a bear to diagnose. How did they do it?
It absolutely was, and I'm going to tell you about that. But before we do that, why don't you head on down with me to the billing department?
Let's go. You've probably heard about HelloFresh in the past. It's a huge meal kit in America. I mean, the number one meal kit in America. But this fall, they're serving up even more love. Folks, this isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's new. HelloFresh has doubled its menu. Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. You can also, if you're into veggies, you can eat greener with some new veggie-packed recipes that have two or more veggies per dish. That's, I gotta say, folks, that's ambitious for me. I think a two-veggie meal, I'd be feeling pretty darn good about myself. I really like this new offering from HelloFresh. All these options, you are definitely going to find some stuff that you love. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free breakfast for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on first box. New subscribers only, varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/Sawbones10FM to get 10 free meals plus free breakfast for life. I think staying connected is really one of the best gifts that you can give during this holiday season. And I think Aura Frames is a really good way of doing that. Here's what you do. It's a digital photo frame. You set it up for the intended recipient, or they can set it up themselves, you know, if they're a little bit more tech savvy. But once that's done, you are able to send pictures onto that photo frame from anywhere wirelessly through the Aura app. So imagine this. You set it up for grandma, and then you capture a picture of the kids at the zoo. Maybe there's 5 dolphins. You're like, holy crap, grandma loves dolphins. She's going to love this picture. Well, she could be seeing it just by uploading it directly to her frame. Even if grandma's already got one, what if she needs a second one in the toilet? Or it doesn't have to be in there. It could be anywhere. But imagine that. You get beautiful designs from Aura range from, like, I just saw the new Carver mat that it's new to me. I got a new Carver mat frame. It's really beautiful. I like all the designs, and I think you will too. Not just for you, though. Maybe it's a gift. But you know what? Grab one for yourself. You're going to be jealous. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver mat frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code Sawbones at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Sawbones. This deal is exclusive to listeners, and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. So how do we diagnose syphilis?
So there was a lot
of... Pretend that I paused an appropriate amount of time between dinner chat and syphilis chat, just unless I edited in like 10 seconds of silence.
Is there an appropriate amount of...
There is no appropriate... Imagine there was some music. Let me try again. Bart.
That's the music that you get after dinner and before syphilis? That music has never led anyone from dinner to the activities that necessitate, you know, happening before you get syphilis.
How do we diagnose syphilis, smart aleck? I'm going to eat my lemon almond biscotti bites while you tell me how to diagnose syphilis.
Still crunching the microphone. So there was a lot of confusion for a while about whether syphilis was its own disease or if it was part of gonorrhea. And I think we talked about this as well, because remember there was the one doctor who, in order to prove, we talked about this in the self-diagnosis section. So in order to prove that syphilis and gonorrhea were different or the same. He didn't know. He took pus from a syphilis sore and he injected it into his own penis.
Such a cool dude.
And then he got syphilis and gonorrhea because the person he got it from had syphilis and gonorrhea. And anyway, so as a result, there was a lot of confusion for a long time. So people thought that you got gonorrhea first and then later on it would become syphilis. So it took many years for us to figure out that no, while they are both transmitted in the same fashion, these are definitely different diseases. And it wasn't until like 1838 that we actually figured this out. The doctor who wrote...
Doctor Who is involved?
Doctor Who, no! Don't bring Doctor Who into this syphilis conversation. Don't start spreading vicious rumors. That would make a lot more sense, though. How did syphilis get everywhere?
Yeah.
All throughout history and space and the Earth. Think about it.
There was a somewhat funny image going around back, I mean, sort of gallows humor, but back during when the Ebola outbreak was when we were treating doctors here for Ebola, there was a screen capture from Fox News or CNN or something, and at the bottom it said, "Doctor Who brought Ebola back from Africa." And a bunch of people were sharing that, like, "No, how could he? Why would he do this to us?
He's supposed to be a good guy."
No, you're on our team.
So the Doctor Who established it.
Right.
Was Dr. Philippe Ricord, and he was the first one to describe the three stages of syphilis and to note that this is a distinct disease. And at the time, it was still a clinical diagnosis. So you just kind of look for these three stages and go, okay, you probably have syphilis. The reward for being the first one to formally describe syphilis as its own disease is that the initial chancre forever forth became known as Ricord's chancre.
Wow, what an honor.
So I don't know that in retrospect, he probably wishes he hadn't figured that out. Yeah. I think this is interesting. And anyone who is listening, who's like in medical school or who is a doctor, who's ever studied any of this stuff is going to like this too. He worked under Dr. Dupuytren, who has a contracture named for him, Dupuytren's contracture. And his protege was Dr. Fournier of gangrene fame, Fournier's gangrene, which is a gangrene of the scrotum.
I would literally rather listen to you describe symptoms of syphilis.
Okay. Well, anyway, I thought it was cool. We know a lot more about syphilis and like the course of the illness as far as what happens if you don't do anything to try to treat it from stage to stage because of a really horrible study that was done. And a lot of people have heard of this before, the Tuskegee study. So between 1932 and 1972, the U.S. Public Health Service did a study in Tuskegee, Alabama, where basically they recruited rural African-American men and tested them to see if they had syphilis and then didn't really do anything. They would bring them in periodically and tell them that they were taking care of them, that they were getting free medical care, but they didn't actually do anything to alter the course of their illness. They didn't treat them in any way. They didn't even tell them that they had syphilis. So the participants that came in that were positive for syphilis, they never let them know. And initially in 1932, when this was started, we didn't have a great treatment. But in the 40s, when penicillin was introduced, we did. We had an excellent treatment for syphilis, and they still didn't offer this to any of the participants or even tell them that they needed it. They even, men who were registering for the draft during World War II, were tested for syphilis and found positive, the U.S. Public Health Service attempted to intervene in these cases so that the military would not tell them that they were positive, so that they wouldn't then get treatment through the military. Hmm. So they actively kept people from getting treated. So it was a really horrible, dark period, I think, in our history. And a lot of men died from syphilis, and their wives got syphilis, and some of their children were born with congenital syphilis. So that's where, unfortunately, a lot of information as to what happens when you don't treat syphilis comes from this really, really awful, awful study. So anyway, what treatments have we used over time for syphilis? Mm-hmm. Initially, we tried a lot of herbal treatments, as we did with everything.
Sure.
Wild pansy, something called guaiacum or holy wood, which guaiac is also used to test stool for blood. I didn't know that's where that came from.
Huh.
It's like an herb that we use for that. This was not very effective, but this, you know, we didn't know. We put it on wounds and hope they got better. Mercury was the biggest treatment historically for syphilis. You could take it any way you wanted to. You could eat it. You could inject it directly at the site if you were so inclined. There were a lot of salves, like topical applications, like take this cream and rub it all over your syphilis. Or a lot of people like to kind of be fumigated with mercury. So like you would sit in a box.
Do a lot of people like to be fumigated with mercury, Sydney?
Well, back then they did.
Okay. It's an odd phrasing.
Sorry.
You know what I'd like? What I'd like is to be fumigated with mercury.
If you had syphilis, you probably would, because you didn't know what else to do.
Oh, Daniel, we don't have time to be fumigated with mercury. We only have the afternoon. But, Rebecca, I'd really like to be fumigated with mercury. Sydney says I'd like to be fumigated with mercury.
If you had syphilis... Anyway, so you would sit in a box.
New crew is sweeping the nation. People liking being fumigated with mercury. Not being required to or having to. They don't like it, says modern day doc.
Are you good with your syphilis jokes? Yeah, mercury jokes? Are you happy now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to move on to something else.
Just let me know. I'll keep educating the public whenever you're done.
Keep educating the public. I got these lemon biscotti bites. I'm good.
So anyway, you would sit in a box with your head sticking out of it, and then they would put some mercury in it and then heat it underneath. So like the idea was that you would kind of absorb the mercury gas.
Does it actually have a low, does mercury have a low temperature at which it changes to a gas? Like just like it is, you know how it has a low temperature at which it changes from?
No, it's a liquid most of the time.
Like the boiling point is low, I'm wondering. This is what I'm asking.
You know, I don't know the temperature that it becomes a gas, but I do know that this is one of the most ineffective ways to deliver mercury is through the gas form. So I don't know if that's because it doesn't become a gas or because it just isn't absorbed that way. I'm sure somebody is looking this up right now.
Yeah.
You would usually, if you were going to use it, you would usually just sit in a hot room near a fire and then rub mercury on your skin several times a day. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you would put some arsenic on your skin too with the mercury just to really get it in there. There were also drinks that were sold. There were chocolate drinks that were sold by street vendors that were laced with mercury. And the idea behind this specifically was so that a man could buy them and give them to his wife and children.
That's not good.
Without them knowing.
That's not a good thing to do.
What he was doing. So you could treat your wife for syphilis by saying, hey, honey, I have this lovely chocolate beverage for you. So basically, anytime you try to give me anything with chocolate in it, I'm going to now wonder. You're
being a little suspicious.
This led to the phrase, a night with Venus and a lifetime with Mercury.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah. Malaria was used to treat syphilis briefly. the idea was that, and this was a common therapy, that if you could induce a high fever, you could kill some sort of disease that a person had. Mm-hmm. Malaria was just, it induced really high fevers, and so that it was used. And especially after we had quinine to cure malaria, it was thought, well, this is an acceptable risk then, because we can just give you syphilis, you have syphilis, and we'll give you malaria, and then you'll get better. So if you didn't want to do that, you could just sit in like a steam room. Which seems a little better to me. There were surgeries we already talked about that could reconstruct your nose. And again, we mentioned this in the plastic surgery episode, but this involved like sewing your arm to your face.
Ugh.
So that it still had the blood supply from your arm, the skin from your arm, and then you would leave it there until it kind of attached to your face and then disconnect it. That would be weeks. And then there was a great treatment that came out in 1908 called Salversan. This was actually the first thing that really did treat syphilis well. Not that it was a perfect treatment by any stretch. It was also known as 606, which I think is very ominous.
Yeah, that's threatening, I think.
But that was just because it was the sixth in a series of six collections of compounds that were tested or something.
Mm-hmm. Like Formula 409.
Sort of like that, yeah. Yep. Yeah. And this was, we found this just a few years after we finally isolated the cause of syphilis, bacteria called a spirochete called Treponema pallidum. We had just figured that out. We started using Salversan, which was an organoarsenic compound, which means it's got arsenic in it. It did definitely kill the spirochetes. It had been thoroughly tested on rabbits, if that makes you feel better. And you had to take a series of mini injections, and it had a lot of toxic side effects, including liver damage, rashes, nausea, vomiting, and maybe you would die.
Oh, man.
So not an ideal treatment.
Nope.
And then in 1943, the world changed. because we had penicillin.
Yay, penicillin!
And this is like the beginning of the end of a lot of infectious disease stories.
Yeah,
because then we had antibiotics. So 1943, penicillin hits the screen, and everybody starts using that for syphilis. And it is still to this day the best cure for syphilis. That's what we would give you if you came into the office today. We'd give you an injection of penicillin. So lots of famous people had syphilis, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Keats did, Toulouse-Lautrec, Manet, Al Capone. It's theorized that people like Napoleon and maybe Van Gogh, maybe Hitler had syphilis.
Oh.
So syphilis was probably another one of these diseases that had a lot more effect on the course of human history than we give it credit for.
Thank you to the taxpayers for letting us use their song Medicines at the intro and outro of our program. We have a Facebook page. Search Sawbones on Facebook. There's a lot of people there discussing episodes. You can also find the page for MaximumFun.org, which is our podcast network. In fact, there was a did you see this 30 response thread on the MaximumFun.org Facebook page about what the guy is saying at the beginning of our theme song? No. This song is about the books. whatever he is saying there, that seems to be the prevailing wisdom right now, is this song is about some books. But because apparently the song Medicines is, if you listen to the lyrics, it's about people who turn into books.
No, I didn't know that's track, what it was about. That I thought down. It was about medicine.
It's about everything. Okay. But thank you to them. MaximumFun.org is a podcast network. We are a part of it, along with other shows like The Adventure Zone, which is a D&D podcast that I do with my brothers and my dad. Bunker Buddies is a new one that my brother Travis does with his friend Andy, and the two of them talk about how you can survive certain disaster scenarios. But it's a comedy show.
You can also check out My Brother and Me, where Justin and his brothers attempt to give you bad advice.
Well, we successfully give bad advice.
Well, that's true. You attempt to give advice and it's bad.
And succeed in giving bad advice. You can check out all those shows plus many, many more at MaximumFun.org. I think that's going to do it for us, Sid. We're on Twitter at Sawbones. She's at Sydney McElroy, SydneyMcElroy.
And he's at Justin McElroy, which is easier to spell.
Until next Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever comes first. I'm Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
As always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.